Hello, and welcome back to the Behind the Binge podcast. It is your host, Marissa. And today, this is a really impromptu recording inspired by my YouTube consumption. I'm a big YouTube watcher. I love watching YouTube videos, and 99% of the time, I'm just watching things that are coming up in the recommended feed. And half the time when I say watching YouTube videos, it's kind of like I'm listening to it like I'm listening to a podcast. I actually am uploading these podcast episodes to YouTube, and I'm sure some of you who are watching right now are actually just wearing headphones, probably doing some laundry or walking your dog or whatever it might be. So as someone who is an avid YouTube consumer, I see a lot of self-help videos that float around. YouTube is a big platform that is full of advice and self-help and how-tos. It is a search engine at the end of the day. So if you're searching for something to help you, whether it be on Google or YouTube, like that is where you will find a lot of honestly valuable information. And Google owns YouTube. And so even when you search something in Google, you will see YouTube videos come up in those search results. And so there's a lot of information that is given to the general public through YouTube as well, through YouTube videos. It's great for many reasons because it is a free platform and it's also a platform of long form content. So the nuances that you can't really get into when it comes to Instagram and TikTok, you can dive into on YouTube. However, it has a downside. It has some cons, which is that anyone and everyone can make content and can say anything with confidence that may not be entirely backed by science, or even if there is some science behind it, can say it in such a black and white way that begins to remove the individualization or the expectation for individualization from advice, from nutrition advice, from fitness advice, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we can't always start every YouTube video with a disclaimer that, like, this is general and it's not individualized for you and this might not be for you, right? Because that just dampens the mood at the beginning of a video. Like, honestly, I'm tired of watching YouTube videos where every single video starts with some big giant disclaimer and they're trying to disclaim all of these things that could possibly be getting them hate. And I get it. They're just, you know, they're trying, I've done it. They're just trying to be like, you know, listen, this might not be for everyone and that's cool. And this is not necessarily individualized, blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, we can't always be doing that or expect creators to do that. I just wanted to come on here today and give my two cents about some of the advice that I see in frequent self-help type videos or frequent self-help type podcasts and conversations that are being had through YouTube and through what I watch on YouTube. So a couple of podcasts specifically that I really, really love. I love the Huberman Lab. I love Diary of a CEO. I love the Ali Abdaal podcast. I forget what that one's actually called, but the podcast by Ali Abdaal. And these are all podcasts where they're interviewing experts. And a lot of times they are talking about topics around health and well-being and mental health, right? And I can get a lot of valuable advice from them. And I have the mindset of I know myself better than anyone else. So I can be listening to these podcasts and take the positive things from them that I feel like would benefit my life and could be applied realistically in my life, and I leave the rest behind. Because there are some things that, you know, Andrew Huberman, which if you don't know, he is a neuroscientist, I think, or he's a neuroscience professor and doctor, and he has a lot of authority. He's like one of the number one health podcasts out there right now, and people believe him for everything that he says with, honestly, I mean, good reason. He is very intelligent person and he backs up a lot of his stuff with science. However, no matter how cited or researched something might be, there's always flaws in it. And you are an individual and not everything can be applied to your life as an individual, especially in the realm of nutrition and weight research. There are a lot of confounding factors that can be influencing the results of what they are sharing that aren't controlled for. It really can't be controlled for in these type of research studies. But when, you know, Andrew Huberman is sharing them, he's not explaining all of the ins and outs of those nuances or sharing that some of these things might be correlational, not causational. And so those listening will take it as fact, as cause and effect. And I know that that's not the case. And I understand that his statements aren't to be taken as black and white, and his statements aren't applicable or helpful or even health promoting for everyone. But I want to share this. And I may have already said that, but I want to share this for those of you who don't know that, to give you a cautious listening ear when taking advice from anyone, when taking advice from me even, because I don't know you better than you know yourself. Andrew Huberman doesn't know you better than you know yourself. Ali Abdaal doesn't know you better than you know yourself. Research doesn't know you better than you know yourself. And there are always going to be nuances in these conversations. And I just want to stop seeing so much conversation that gives out these really like black and white, all or nothing type recommendations. I mean, that's the flashy stuff, right? It's flashy to say sugar is bad for you and you really need to be eating low sugar, or say that fasting until noon is going to make you on top of your cognitive game. You're going to be so focused, or not drinking caffeine is going to be the cure for your anxiety. I mean, I actually think that one has a lot of validity to it, but anyway, at least in my life. But those are the flashy headlines. It's not flashy to be like, we see sometimes X, Y, or Z things can be beneficial, but like, honestly, it's not the most realistic for most people. Or we see decreasing sugar intake can lead to, I don't know, better sleep cycles. That's just a random example that I pulled out of my ass. But if that's what somebody's seeing, they're not saying, but if we really look at the study that we saw, it was 20 people. And all of them had, let's say, binge eating disorder, and we restricted them from sugar for 6 weeks in this study, and they slept better. Okay, we can't take any sort of conclusion from that saying, oh, sugar was the reason they were sleeping poorly, and when we removed it, they were sleeping better, therefore sugar makes you sleep worse. No, I mean, not necessarily. Anything in excess from one food to the next can always have some sort of impact on us that doesn't make us feel our best, but if you have struggled with sleep and you heard this, you might say, oh my gosh, I need to not eat sugar. When in reality, that might not be the case. It may have been in this fake study I'm giving an example of, that it was just simply because during this very controlled period, these people were not binge eating and therefore they were sleeping better, because binging in general, whether it's sugar or not, doesn't make you feel very good and can make you go to bed with, you know, a lot of outside effects and can give you like restless sleep. Of course, that makes so much sense. So if you just restrict sugar, now they're not really binge eating because it's really controlled. Like, there's no cause and effect there. And that's not usually the picture that's painted on these headlines or in these podcast interviews where people are trying to make very concrete statements to inspire you in some way. I don't really find them inspiring. I find them frustrating because I know so many people are listening and are going to take it as a 100% truth and fact that they need to apply to their life. Otherwise, they're not doing the best for their health. And then they spread that to other people. And that can just be harmful in the long term. So where am I going with this? I'm just kind of rambling now. I just want to share with you a bit of my thoughts around the problem with some of the advice that I see out there as it relates to nutrition and weight. Just so that way, when you're listening, when you're watching things, you can absolutely take from them the positives, but fast forward through the things that you're like, you know what, that's just not realistic for me. Or you know what, that sounds like a really black and white rule. And Marissa told me to be cautious of black and white rules. So maybe I can be mindful of this advice they're giving, but also recognize that it's not all or nothing. Overall, I'm going to be framing this around the problem of weight loss advice online and the problem with pursuing health solely based on your weight status. You know, as a weight inclusive provider, a lot of people assume that we take weight off the table. And so therefore we take health promoting behaviors off the table. Do whatever you want. Eat candy all day if that pleases you, and sit around and you don't have to do anything. And I mean, granted, you don't have to do anything. You can eat whatever you want. But my goal is not to turn a blind eye to health. My goal is to help people make health-promoting behaviors in a way that supports them long-term and doesn't lead to this binge eating cycle. So I don't see making weight a determinant of success or of health as being successful long-term in my clients or even in research long-term. And I find a lot of issues with these sort of black and white ideas around like, okay, weight loss is good and not focusing on weight loss isn't good. I want to talk about why framing any sort of advice towards weight loss is a problem. My first point, it creates all or nothing thinking. If we hear that sugar could increase someone's weight, or, you know, sugar causes an increase in insulin and insulin is what causes an increase in weight, all of a sudden it's like, okay, so never eat sugar. When in reality, that is not at all the case. I eat sugar, and I should note at the start of this episode that I am very privileged to live in a straight size body. So even in speaking in all of this, I'm only speaking from the lens of always being in a straight size body, but also with the knowledge and understanding of those with lived experiences, who I have trained under and who I work with every single week who do live in bigger bodies. And so I'm trying to use my privilege as a provider in a straight size body to advocate for those who honestly aren't taken as seriously, unfortunately, and wrongfully just because of their body size. So anyways, it creates this all or nothing thinking that, okay, I heard on this podcast that sugar causes weight gain, so I can't eat sugar. When in reality, when we look at it, it might be for a multitude of reasons. It can be because of the studies that we see. Those people are eating an excess of sugar, but it's not just the sugar that's causing the weight gain. It's just the excess in general. Okay, why are they eating in excess? There's all these nuances around, like, okay, maybe someone is gaining weight from eating an excess of sugar, but it's not about restricting sugar. It's about, okay, how can you eat sugar and listen to your body and maybe balance your blood sugar in order to support your best self? And it doesn't start with restriction, because we know restriction actually just feeds overconsumption even further. Whether that's overconsumption with the rebound effect of the restrict binge cycle to where they're binging on sugar, or even just eating more because they're trying to satisfy the void of not having sugar, right? It's sort of like if you want strawberry ice cream, but you're going to be eating strawberry flavored rice cakes, you're going to eat triple the amount of strawberry flavored rice cakes than if you just had some ice cream and moved on. Not to mention that some people will listen to these podcasts or hear about these studies and assume that that automatically applies to their experience. Like, oh, I am living in a bigger body because I consume an excess of sugar, when you really might not be. But there can be such a snap judgment that's made when we see, oh, sugar causes weight gain, that we think that automatically applies to everyone in larger bodies. Like, everyone in larger bodies consumes sugar and consumes it in excess, when that literally is not the case. There is no cause and effect relationship there, that everyone who eats in excess of sugar is living in a bigger body size. It's just these black and white rules and norms that are formed when something is completely centered around someone's weight. And even if there is a very strong correlation between something in a study like sugar and weight gain, I always ask why. We have to get curious as to why the participants in this study were consuming an excess of sugar. It's not just that they're consuming an excess, there is a reason. And I think that's the big thing that gets missed when we take correlational studies as cause and effect. Because what if all of these participants have a history of dieting and yo-yo dieting? Maybe they're actually consuming in excess because they have felt restricted from it their entire life. Maybe they don't feel neutral with sugar. And so it's the further restriction that is leading them to overconsume, that is contributing to weight gain, that is, you know, the thing we need to be targeting here, not the sugar. And that's where, like, these black and white things, like, they're just not leaving room for the nuance and for these really important questions to why. Why is this experience happening? And we really know that further restricting sugar doesn't solve this issue at hand, if it is an issue at hand for some people. And so that's not even the answer to begin with. It's like the studies that are showing living in heavily polluted areas have negative health side effects. We could pull a black and white rule from that, saying, okay, don't live in those heavily polluted areas and you won't have these health side effects. First of all, we can't guarantee people just won't have certain health side effects for not living in certain areas. But also, if there's a high correlation of people living in that area having poor health side effects, we can't just expect all of these people to move. They are just in that area and they may not have the means to move. And so it's not just about telling people, okay, don't live in those areas. It might be about figuring out why the pollution is happening in the first place. And then if doctors in these areas blamed everyone's health conditions based on the pollution in the area, they may be ignoring other things going on. So it's not all or nothing, and it's not black and white. I don't think we should be demonizing sugar. Sugar has been around for centuries. It is a part of cultures. It is a part of joy. It is a part of connection. And I'm so sick of the sugar slander, for real. Like, every single day I'm working to undo this black and white thinking with sugar with my clients that is actually doing them more harm. I think demonizing sugar does more harm than the good intentions that people are trying to, you know, put out there by saying sugar is bad. An excess of anything is not going to be supportive, especially if someone's actually tuning into their body and realizing, eating an excess of sugar, anything, I don't care if it's bacon, isn't making me feel my best. Maybe I should tweak this and find a little more balance to figure out what best supports me as an individual, not based off of rules. These rules that are created through society and these podcasts, etc., I feel like are created for the 1%. And a lot of studies related to these rules that get out into society are excluding the average 99% of humans. It would be like trying to follow financial advice that was based off of statistics from the top 1% of people. It is not realistic or sustainable for an average individual. I was reading a study recently about Ozempic and looking at it because there was some article that was saying the success of Ozempic in weight loss. And every time I see an article like that, I do not take any headlines for face value. Honestly, half the time the headline is clickbait. And then when you actually read the article, that's not the case. But in this case, they were citing some research study and I clicked on it and I realized that the study pool that they were basing this whole study off of had such refined criteria that I was like, who does this leave us with? It was like no history of any mental health diagnosis, no history of high blood pressure, no history of previous surgeries. No, like it was like you could not have really anything else going on in your life except for having a higher BMI in order to be included in the study and the study's results. So sure, in the study and in the time period that they presented this study, they found X positive results from these participants taking Ozempic. But in order to like take that conclusion and put it in a headline to where people see that and like take that as fact that would also be applied to them, they should be disclaiming that this conclusion or correlation, honestly, everything is correlational. It's hard to find anything cause and effect in nutrition research, but this statement that we're making is based on the people with this criteria, and majority of the average population aren't going to go digging through the study. They're not even going to be educated on how to dig through the study to really understand the methods and procedures that led them to this conclusion in their study. And so, yeah, I don't like that there's not, I mean, of course it's media, like they can't disclaim these things. Kind of like I said at the beginning of this episode, like if every single YouTube video started with a big, great disclaimer, like it would just damper it. It would damper the effect. And honestly, people wouldn't want to click on it. So I get why they make these flashy titles, but it's frustrating when that creates such a mass belief that is not actually rooted in truth. That's not actually rooted in much of anything. So when you're listening to podcasts or watching a video and there are certain rules being spoken about or certain health standards that they're trying to sell to you as this like all or nothing or black and white type of way of living, just remember that this more than likely might be for the 1% of people that this could possibly work for. And odds are that you are not that 1% of people. All right, that was a long-winded first point. I have a couple more points to go over here of kind of the problem with the weight loss advice and rhetoric online. The second point is that it leads people to actually do unhealthy and harmful things for weight loss. At face value, weight loss tends to be a pursuit of health. Some people consider it a pursuit of confidence, etc. However, at what cost are we pursuing health? And at what point does our health pursuits become the opposite? Do they actually become unhealthy? Every single one of my clients that when they first come to me are engaging in actually unhealthy, harmful, dangerous behaviors in pursuit of weight loss that not only have they been prescribed by a medical professional or by a coach of some sort, but are encouraged to keep doing to lose weight. I know that for many people living in bigger bodies, they would do anything to be in a smaller body because the world that we live in today is not set up to be accepting unconditionally of people in diverse body sizes, which is fucked up. I don't say the F word a lot on this podcast, but that is one thing I say, even to my clients, I say that's fucked up and you don't deserve that. And so I understand the desire to be like, I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to chop up my organs if that means I will lose weight. But if we actually get down to why you want to lose weight and long term in your life, what you want to feel, is that, are those behaviors supporting that? And you might lose weight, but if it comes with a cost of all these terrible side effects, or if the things you have to do in order to lose weight are unhealthy or bad for you, then is that really worth it? And why did you decide that? You know, smoking can cause weight loss. Does that mean that you should be smoking? No. And yeah, that's kind of my point. That's it. Is just when everything is about weight, it actually leads people to doing things that are unhealthy in order to lose weight. My next point is that the problem with weight loss advice is that it creates this reliance on external motivation and external signals in order to designate success or even to justify your next behaviors. And this, over time, further disconnects you from any sort of intrinsic goals that you might have and internal body cues. Your body is probably screaming at you in certain ways that, hey, I need some help. What you're doing right now is not helping me. I'm getting injured, or I'm having stomach problems, or I'm binging. But this idea that everything is about weight is blinding you from that, is keeping you so disconnected that it's like, but I haven't lost weight. And so these stomach issues cannot be related to the fact that I'm starving myself. It is just because I'm still living in a bigger body. And it sucks that sometimes the world corroborates that belief, but that is just not true. So what would you do if you were in a smaller body and you were having these gut issues or injury issues, right? We need to be thinking about it. If weight was off the table here, what would be the most beneficial thing for you in this moment? And when everything is in this reliance on these external rules and signals and cues, you start to do what everyone else thinks you should do, and you begin to forget what it is that you want and what makes you feel good. You forget your values and your long-term vision for what your life is going to look like, all because somebody is telling you that you should be doing this other thing. Also, when everything is really zoomed in on just, you know, your body being the indicator of success or health or just your overall pursuits, this ends up discounting the bigger picture. Everything ends up being blamed on weight. Like I just said, oh, it's not that I'm having these stomach issues because I'm starving myself. It's because I'm in a bigger body or because I'm not losing weight. When in reality, like, that is not that. I have had so many clients come to me and be like, I just want the energy to feel good again. And ever since I gained weight, I've been so, so tired. I'm so tired, and it's because I've gained weight. And then when we actually take a look at their behaviors, I see they don't eat breakfast every day. Honestly, most days, coffee is the only thing fueling them through the day until dinner. They are in a chronic restrict binge cycle, and they're saying it's all because of their weight, when I'm saying that their food behaviors, and most oftenly just food inadequacy, is what's leaving them being so tired. But everything is getting blamed on weight, so they're actually further hurting their energy levels by further restricting because they think it's all about their weight, when that restriction and that dangerous, you know, disordered eating cycle is what's causing them to be so fatigued in the first place. So even when you're trying to problem solve maybe a health issue that's going on, sometimes there's not always an answer. And I know that's unfortunate as a human to feel as though you're not in control of everything in relation to your health, but unfortunately, sometimes you're just not. But if you're trying to figure out if something in your life is contributing to not feeling so good, put weight to the side. Even if you're still stuck in a weight-centric mindset, go, okay, well, if I were in a smaller body, what would I possibly consider? Or if your doctor's giving you advice that is just lose weight, it'll fix your problems, lose weight, you can ask your doctor, if I was in a smaller body, what would you tell me? Because there is not a single health condition that is exclusive to those in bigger bodies. There just isn't. So if you have high blood pressure and your doctor says lose weight and your blood pressure will go down, say, if I were in a smaller body, what would you tell me? Because I know people in my personal life who have high blood pressure and are in smaller bodies. And so it is not just about losing weight. Ask them what else, what other interventions are there to support them in lieu of weight loss. And honestly, when we're blaming everything on weight and only thinking about weight as our end goal, we can even be missing how weight and any drastic weight fluctuations we've experienced are actually side effects of other things. When I am saying I am weight neutral, I'm not saying we ignore any weight changes. Both ends of the spectrum, drastic weight loss or drastic weight gain, all of a sudden out of nowhere can be indicators of something health-wise going on. Not always. Our bodies are meant to change, especially my clients who are, you know, between the ages of 16 and like 25. I just want you to know, if you randomly over 1 year have a drastic weight change, that might just be your body maturing, especially as females. Like, that is so normal. Your body is meant to change. However, if anything really drastic happens and you're simultaneously not feeling so good, yeah, weight can be an indicator of something going on, but it's not weight that's the problem. Weight is the side effect. If you drastically lose a lot of weight, and then by looking further into it, you have a health condition and your body is just not giving you an adequate appetite to sustain a weight that is best for your body, then that weight loss is the side effect of that. But it's not necessarily a positive or a negative thing. It was just the indicator that, hey, something else is going on that we might need to look at. We're not going to focus on just weight gain. We're going to focus on this medical condition. And same with a lot of weight gain. I've had clients in the past where we're working together and we know weight gain can be part of the recovery process, but they gained a significant amount of weight. They're feeling really uncomfortable. They were still having these extreme cravings. And I'm like, you know what? This drastic of weight gain, we might want to look at if there's a medical condition going on. I want you to go to your doctor and get screened for thyroid issues or PCOS. And it's like, okay, PCOS is what's going on. Weight gain is a side effect of that. So again, we're not going to focus on weight because that doesn't help long term. And it's also just a freaking side effect. We're going to focus on the blood sugar balancing behaviors you could be engaging in, the health promoting exercise you could be engaging in, all in support of your PCOS management, not just about weight in and of itself. Are you following me here? Basically, what I'm trying to say is that when everything is focused on weight, everything becomes reliant on weight as the answer. Oh, the weight loss or the weight gain, like, it's just about the weight. Weight could be a side effect alongside other symptoms like fatigue, like tiredness, but it's not the weight. That's just there too. It might be, you know, something else going on, whether that's mental health, physical health, or even just overall behaviors. Oh my gosh, I have so many clients who tell me, I just can't walk up the stairs like I used to. I can't hike like I used to. I can't go jog like I used to, whatever it is. I can't do X, Y, or Z physical thing like I used to. And it's because I gained weight. And when I lose weight, I just know I'll be able to do those things. I'm like, well, what if I said that exact same thing as someone in a smaller body, what would you say to me that I need to do if it's not my weight? And they're like, well, you need to start moving more, right? If you haven't been moving so much, maybe doing some training, maybe going for hikes more often. And I'm like, okay, are you doing those things? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay, so is it really the weight or is it that you stopped moving? I mean, anyone in any body size, when they stop moving, it's going to be harder to do it from then on out. And it's not the weight, it is the behaviors. I mean, this whole podcast, the conclusion is really focus on your behaviors. Weight can change up or down alongside those behaviors, but the most sustainable thing for you is to go, okay, if I want to feel better, if I want to better support my health, if I want to support this physical health or mental health condition that I have, what are behaviors I can engage in that support that? And weight is not a behavior. My last point is that everything being catered to weight loss is that it creates an expectation that we should all look the same. We are the only species where it is expected for us to all have the same body type. Think about it. Dogs, there's labs, there's chihuahuas, there's poodles, there's mutts, there's all sorts of different types of dogs, right? And they don't all look the same. They don't all have the same body type. My sister has like a lab mix. And then my other little sister has like a Whippet mix. My little sister's Whippet mix dog, his name is Dax. He is like lean and skinny, has this tiny little waist. And then Bree's dog, Zuri, my older sister's dog, who's the lab mix, is like thicker. I mean, have you seen labs? Labs are thicker. We call her our dog from home. We had a lab mix growing up as well. We call her a corn dog because the body shape that she has doesn't really go in, that waste doesn't go in like the Whippet mix does. I also have a dog who's like a Chihuahua mixed with a miniature Schnauzer. I mean, her body type is entirely different than those two as well. But even if we think about just two big dogs, she has this Whippet mix, then we have this Lab mix. The Lab is thicker in general, and we're not expecting the Lab to look like the Whippet. It's just not realistic. And as humans, we have all sorts of different cultures. We have all sorts of different body types. And literally, it makes no sense that we should all look the same. If every single one of us here listening to this podcast today ate the exact same ways, we didn't eat any sugar, we woke up at 5 a.m., we did a cold plunge every morning, we drank our greens juice, and we had the same job and the same level of stress and the same everything, we would still not look the same. We wouldn't. And I think that's something we all need to realize, is that when we're all in pursuit of this one quote-unquote ideal body type that was decided by society for us, 99% of people are getting set up for failure because it is not realistic. And I know I'm saying this from a great place of privilege where I am in a straight-sized body and it's easier for me to say that, but I have to be realistic with you that because I don't want you to end up wasting your life trying to be something that isn't possible for you, or at least isn't possible without you starving yourself and cutting up your organs and taking medication that makes you nauseous and makes you have gastroparesis and possibly a pancreatitis as a side effect, all for this pursuit of thinness. I want you to just feel good. And if you engaging in health promoting behaviors that make you feel good ends up leaving you in a larger body size, but you're eating your fruits and vegetables, drinking more water than ever, you're able to move, you're able to do things that just bring you joy, that are realistic and within your own abilities, like, then that's great. And weight doesn't have to be something that now we have to be like, okay, I'm able to do all these things and feel great, but I am in a bigger body, so therefore I need to starve myself and feel worse in order to, you know, keep going through this. Oh, am I making any sense? Okay, this is a long one for a solo episode, but I'm just going to leave you here with this. A, if you think that healing your relationship with food means that you are going to no longer be healthy, you are wrong. You're actually going to be healthier because we know the disordered relationship with food is not healthy. So therefore, eating some candy to stop binge eating is healthier than continuing the restrict binge cycle, right? B, nothing in life is black and white. Nothing in nutrition and weight science is black and white. There is, I'm pretty sure, no study, at least that I've ever seen, that shows any causal relationship between weight and health. Cause and effect, nope. And so treating headlines and YouTube videos as such, this is the answer, this is your answer, is just further disconnecting you from yourself and what your body really needs and how this advice makes you feel as an individual. And that if you want to live a healthful life and you create realistic health goals for yourself, focus on behaviors that support your health goals outside of weight. And I say that because people might be like, okay, my health goal is to lose weight. And so my behavior is I'm going to eat less. Yeah, sure. But you have to be listening to your body. And if by doing that, you are now hungry and having this ravenous appetite and binging and feeling obsessed with food and missing out on social events, you need to really redefine what health is to you and what those goals are. I think weight should really be off the table here because remember, making everything about weight tends to lead people to actually engage in unhealthy activities in order to do so. I'm trying to think of a good example of this, but like if, I don't know, everything was about having blonde hair. I mean, this is a bad example because, you know, we don't live in a world that stigmatizes people who don't have blonde hair. But let's say that that's the only way that I felt I could be healthy or good enough or confident enough. Okay, so I dye my hair. Sure, that is harmless in and of itself, but doing it repeatedly, consistently, as my roots grow in, I have to re-dye it, I have to re-bleach it. Over time, my hair starts to die. Doing that forever, my hair starts to fall out. Doing that without being mindful of, oh, hey, my hair is like really getting split ends. I need to cut some of this. Maybe I need to balayage some of this. Maybe I need to like kind of reel it back in on this like platinum blonde. Ignoring all of that just harms my hair. And so it's the same with weight. Ignoring the way in which your body is speaking to you and trying to tell you what would be best for you is just harmful in the long term. And that happens when we make everything about weight. All right, I had bullets for this episode, but I didn't have a script, and you could probably tell, but I really hope you took something away from this podcast episode today. Overall, listen to these self-help podcasts. I don't care. I listen to them. Sometimes I get frustrated listening to them. Sometimes I get some really valuable insight from them. But the second they start trying to tell you exactly how you need to eat and exactly how you need to look, remember that nothing is black and white. And what they're saying is probably pulled from a needle in a haystack from a study that was made for the 1%, and that is maybe working for them, but realistically being applied to your life long term is not going to look like the way that they're talking about it. And you can take it in a balanced approach, but overall, listen to your body above everything else. You know yourself better than anyone else. And when we can actually tune out all of the noise of diet culture around us and tune into our own bodies, we can do behaviors that make us feel our best and help support us the longest and support our longevity without harming ourselves. And, you know, you can experiment with advice that you hear online, but, you know, it just isn't all or nothing. All right, that's it. That's it for today's episode. If you liked it, please feel free to leave a review. Ratings and reviews really help me not only feel motivated to keep doing this podcast, but also to get this podcast message out to others. Because I know people find podcasts and then they go straight to the reviews. They go, do I want to give my time to this podcast? What should I expect from this podcast? And your reviews are valuable to encourage someone to listen. And if you find this podcast beneficial to your life and you feel like it would be beneficial to others, leave a review, because that is exactly how you encourage someone else who probably needs this message to tune in. So I super, super appreciate your podcast reviews. And yeah, I hope that you have a great rest of your day, great weekend, a great whatever it is, if you're listening to this on a Wednesday, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye, everyone.